Everyday Astrology with C.A. Brooks on Transcendental Tuesdays here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we listen to the world. And this is May 13th, 2025. And my guest today is the amazing Mo Abdelbaty, Vedic astrologer and tarot master and Renaissance man. You know him. Many of you, you know, you're very familiar because he's been on 1-2 Listen. He teaches classes on 1-2 Academy. He's on 1-2 Radio, has been for a decade, more than a decade, along with me. And he also does some YouTube stuff. He has written multiple tarot and oracle decks. So, I mean, you know, he's kind of a person that's just been around for a long time doing many, many things. And by the way, somebody's doing some construction outside. That seemed to have just started up in the last minute or so, but hopefully it won't be a whole hour of whatever that mechanical thing is that they're doing out there. And if it gets to be too annoying, please let me know. And the way you can let me know is by joining us over in our private group on Facebook in our chat room. And the easiest way to get there is to go to 12radio.com and click on that button that says chat. When you do that, you'll be redirected to our private group in Facebook. So yeah, if you hear a lot of noise or the sound isn't good, just, you know, drop me a little note over there and I'll try to keep an eye on that. So thank you for doing that. And I am going to introduce the cosmic dance for this week, at least for a few minutes before we get Mo on. But in terms of announcements, I do want to say I had told Mo I, you know, always spend some time in the yard with my dog in the morning. And this morning, the wind has been blowing here for a couple of days, and that always stirs up a lot of stuff. And so when I came in, I just kept sneezing nonstop. So I said, Mo, if all of a sudden I get really quiet, you know, I'm still here. I probably just turned my microphone off so I could sneeze. I'm going to try not to cough or sneeze into the microphone. Boy, it's just always something, isn't it? But even that kind of gave me pause because I thought, you know, when you think about that on a metaphysical level, it's sort of like you don't want to be allergic to life, right? You don't want to be allergic or, you know, always kind of putting out everything in your environment. But on the other hand, like I said, literally, sometimes with the winds here, I can see the dirt and the pollen and everything literally just blowing through the air. I mean, literally see it. And so, you know, that's what your body, your immune system is trying to do is say, hey, wait a minute, I don't need all this stuff in my lungs. And so sneezing is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. But in any case, let's move on with the show. And the things that I want to touch base on this morning are the things that have been going on this week. And I mean, of course, we're just a day or so into it, but we did have that full moon in Scorpio yesterday. And I hope that one of these last couple of nights you've had the opportunity to see it. At least from where I was, it was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it truly was. And one night there were a few clouds, and it was really interesting. It seemed very Scorpio to me because these few clouds just kept obscuring parts of the moon and then moving away. Of course, with the wind, right? But I thought it was very Scorpio because, you know, Scorpio, we dive really deeply. And we're going underneath the surface and we're trying to ferret out some of those things. And we're not afraid to go into the darkness. We're not afraid to see what's under there. So I thought that, at least for me, was very symbolic to see those what look like very, very dark clouds just kind of skittering across the moon and reshaping and doing different things. It was a very nice visual display to spend some time watching the moon the last couple of nights. So I hope that you got the chance to see that too. But there again, on a psychological and emotional level, when we have a full moon, things come to culmination. And in Scorpio, of course, that's it. You know, it could be definitely this aha moment. You know, something that comes to you that either you've been thinking about for a long time, and maybe it comes into your consciousness and you sort of deny it, or possibly it's something brand new that comes into your consciousness. And that full moon energy, which in a sense stays with us for a few days or maybe a week, but what will stay with us for sure are some of the other astrological aspects that were going on at the time. And That's what I want to talk about for just a couple minutes, because I think they're very interesting. One of the things going on this week is that Mercury, the planet of thinking and communication, is making two squares. Yesterday, during that full moon, literally minutes after that full moon, Mercury squared Pluto, the planet of transformation. And then on Saturday, Mars is going to square Mars, which is the planet. Mercury is going to square Mars, which is the planet of energy and kind of activation and inspiration. And so when I look at those two things, there again, when you think about aha moments, or you think about things coming into your consciousness, Mercury is kind of pushing the issue, kind of forcing the issue and saying, you know, I need an adjustment, or I'm trying to figure out this cognitive dissonance that's going on in my life. How do these two or three things that don't seem to be true, how can they both be true at the same time? Or is it this way or that way? Is it black and white? And I think Mercury is just giving us that opportunity through those squares to really challenge our thinking, which to me is always a really good thing. Not that we have to change our minds, but just always recognize that we're using filters. We're using preconceived ideas, and everything that we see, everything that we interpret and perceive is through a filter. And there's nothing wrong with the filters, but it's so much better when we recognize what our filters are and how they're working for us or how they're not working for us. Now, another thing going on this week, which was very much part of the energy of the full moon, is that the sun comes into its annual, it does this every year, conjunction with Uranus. Uranus represents rebellion, revolution. It's the urge that we have within us to make some kind of an adjustment or a change. And many people call, I like it, I like this moniker, we call Uranus the Great Awakener. Because it sort of says, oh, you know, I mean, and I think about it just like when you're sitting in your chair, like right now, whatever you're doing, maybe you're walking, maybe you're sitting, maybe you're, you know, doing dishes, whatever you're doing as you're listening to this, you know, you shift your weight from foot to foot or maybe from side to side. You sit too long in a certain position and your body automatically says, okay, time to adjust, time to adjust. And that's what keeps our circulation moving. And, you know, makes it so that we're not getting bruises from sitting in the same position for 2 hours at a time. So that planet, the Great Awakener, Uranus operates in that way to kind of keep poking us and say, have you looked at this lately? Have you looked at this lately? This feels too tight. This feels too narrow. This feels too open. I need a little boundary over here. So Uranus is that wonderful planet that when it's sitting next to the sun, which is ego, it can be very, very exciting, very spontaneous. It's very self-determined energy. So in some ways, I think this is the kind of week where we may need some advice from somebody. It might help if we're, you know, bouncing ideas off somebody, but we're not going to want to do it. And why? Because we don't want to ask permission. We don't want to wait for confirmation or to ask permission from somebody else. We just want to do it. So that's the kind of energy that we've got sitting out there. And also, you know, I want to give you an example of a few people that were born with the sun right next to Uranus. One of them was Lewis Carroll, who is the author of the, you know, Alice, you know, in Wonderland, down the, through, you know, Looking Glass, whatever it's called. It actually has a very long title. He had that combination in Aquarius. And if you think about somebody who wrote a series of books that really challenges your way of thinking, it would be those stories. So he's, I think, a perfect example. Another person who has it in Taurus, which is where it is now, is Barbara Streisand. And Sigmund Freud also had it. And there again, I think about Sigmund Freud, whether you like him, whether you don't, whether you think he knew what he was talking about or he was a crazy person, the truth is he challenged our thinking, especially about what reality is. And of course, he did all that work with dreams and how he called dreams the royal road, because it shows us what we're really thinking. It shows us what's really in our minds. So that is the kind of energy that's going on this week. So, you know, don't be surprised if you feel a little bit restless. You know, if you are thinking, boy, I'm not sure what's going on. But before I leave this, I want to say, here's another thing I wanted to throw out. It's interesting to me that during the full moon, the sun in Taurus was in a positive trine aspect to the south node of the moon in Virgo. And the moon in Scorpio was in a trine both to the north node and Saturn in Pisces. Now, I know right now that sounds like a lot of word salad, right? So you don't have to concentrate on exactly what I just said. Just bear with me for a minute. And we'll even ask Mo what he thinks about this. But collectively, when I saw the nodes being very involved in this, you know, full moon, and it wasn't an eclipse, which is, you know, often when the nodes are involved in some way, that's what it is. But when I saw that, I thought, you know what, this kind of goes along with that idea of, you know, we have to really look honestly, you know, and here I'm talking south node, we have to look honestly at what's not working for us and taking responsibility for our decisions. And there again, it's not that the south node is what's not working. It's that sometimes we get into ruts. We get into, hey, this is how I do it. This is so familiar. But is it still working for you? So I think this is about owning up to our choices and kind of understanding that continuum between the south node and the north node, which in my mind has to do with understanding what's familiar, being able to stand on your experience while being open to something new at the same time. And to me, the idea of true empowerment in our lives is when we can really just see who we really are. You know, we can accept our past. We can accept, you know, our assets. We can accept our talents and our gifts, as well as the things that we think that we don't do so well. And just understand that every decision that we make has an effect. And if we created where we are now, then guess what? We can create something else in the future. That's a very, very powerful place to be, is to understand that taking responsibility for our decisions is actually what empowers us to create the futures that we want. So that's my kind of wrap for what's going on this week. Let's welcome Mo onto the show. Welcome, Mo. Are you there?
I'm here. Morning.
Good morning. And I know that we have probably varying ideas about what the South and North Node mean, and we don't even need to talk about that. But just what's going on in your world, or do you have any comments about the full moon? Did you see the full moon?
I did not. I looked for it. It wasn't all that cloudy here, but I didn't get out front in the front yard. I looked for it and missed it. And then I was in the backyard and wasn't out late enough. Our dog, our puppy, still a year old, but still puppy-ish, gets us up at the literal crack of dawn. My God. So we are having to go to bed early. And because we get up really early, and it's, I imagine this is our life now, is getting up. So now we have that movable feast, you know, it's as soon as there's a glimmer of light on the horizon, she's up. And consequently, we're up too. So I've been up since, you know, five something. Mm-hmm. And that is, for me, horrific because I'm a night owl. I like to stay up till after midnight, you know, one or two. Mm-hmm. And that's a great time to do the type of, you know, stuff that I like to do, which is ridiculous. But that's okay, you know, so, which is usually when I go out and look at the stars, because the seeing is better than, as astronomers like to say. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm a night owl too. So I'm almost always out in the yard somewhere between midnight and 2 o'clock.
There you go. That's me too.
I mean, that is absolutely me. And I'm with you. Those hours late at night are, I mean, in fact, some times people say, what are you doing up till late? And I go, well, I just get wrapped up into something, you know, on my computer or whatever. And I'm looking or I'm reading a book and I just get so wrapped up into it. But that's it. If I don't get to bed by 10 o'clock, then I'm off and running on something. You know, that's my mind just clicks in and everybody else has gone to bed. It's quiet. And, you know, I can just sit and there again, even listen to a podcast. I can just get involved in whatever it is.
Oh, yeah. And she's now like, get up, we're up. It's like, no, I want to go, you know, come on, let me get 5 more minutes. Nope, not at all. So.
Well, and that's where, truthfully, I'm lucky. In fact, I have been shocked at this because my dog, from the very beginning, I think, you know, he wasn't used to staying up so late. But because he is up late with me, he will sleep in. Sometimes I'm the one going, okay, get up already. You know, come on. Now, every once in a while, you know, especially like right now when it does get light really early, he wants to go see the coyotes. I mean, there's coyotes in the yard, there's rabbits, and he wants to get right out there. And so sometimes I will let him out for just like 10 minutes. And then I say, okay, we're going back to bed.
Right.
No, but, and he'll do it. He'll do it.
Oh,
so
no,
I understand what you're talking about. And yeah, that's tough when you're a night owl and you've got a puppy that wants up.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, so I'm not a night owl that much anymore. I'm actually beginning to get used to it, which rather terrifies me. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe I'll get used to it completely and become productive, which kind of grosses me out. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Yeah, I've never been.
But you know what? I would say I have always been a night owl ever since I was a little kid. And I was one of these kids, sure, I could get up and go to school or get up and go to work, you know, hit those 7:30, 8 o'clock hours, you know, in my work life. But the minute the weekend hit, I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning again. I have never, ever really adjusted to that 8 to 5 mentality or to be in bed by 10 or 11 o'clock.
Yeah, it's I've always found it
never
to be
been
subversive.
Able to turn that around.
Yeah, I've always, I mean, school for me was pure torture. And I, you know, I had to take the bus during a period of my life where I had to get up like at 5:30, be on the bus by 7. And, you know, it was just, oh, my God, it was just horrific. So,
well, and there's top, what time of day were you born?
I was born at 9:30 at night.
Yeah, see, I was born a few minutes before 2 a.m.
Yeah, I was born literally 3 minutes before the full moon. So,
yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, that's a good time for me, you know, right? I'm not that fond of sunset. I'm not a big fan of, I shouldn't say that. I'm not a big fan of sunrise. I just am not, I don't want to see the sunrise. That's unnatural, you know. So in ancient Egypt, it was kind of mandated that everyone would get up and greet the rising sun.
Yeah.
So they would actually be up and everyone would go out and greet the rising sun. And I'm thinking, well, that's nice work if you can get it, you know.
Yes.
But it's not for me. And, I've done it. I've seen the sunrise on more than one occasion. And it always wreaks havoc with my digestive system. It's just not for me, you know. But well, lately, it's happened.
Go ahead.
Well, just for the last year, it's been a pretty common thing.
Well, and actually, I love to see the sunrise. I love to see the sunset. But for sunrise, I just don't want to be up for it. But when I am, it's so incredible. I mean, especially in Denver. I remember the most glorious sunrises in December.
Yeah. Oh, there.
Just unbelievably beautiful.
Right.
Yeah. So I like it, but like you said, good luck if you can get it.
Well, the ones I hated more than any other was when you're not supposed to be out all night, but you end up being out all night.
Yes, in the sunset.
And then you're going, what's going on? No, that can't be, you know.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Mo.
Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, now I am in huge trouble. So, but anyway, yeah. So, actually, the moon in Scorpio is my lunar birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I was born with a Scorpio moon. So.
Right. And like you said, just minutes before the full moon.
Yeah, just like 3 minutes. My mom was in labor for 4 days because they induced labor because, well, reasons that we don't need to get into here. But, and I wouldn't pull the chute, you know, pull the ripcord. And so, and these were things that she would tell me when I was ungrateful, which was almost all the time. And she would say, you know, I was in labor for 4 days in her Egyptian accent. And so what happened
was you were waiting for the full moon.
I was apparently waiting for that and for my fur to grow, you know. And so but the story that I was told, which she loved to tell me, was that she was in such agony that she got on her knees in order to alleviate the pain. And these sisters, you know, the nurses, it was in England, came in and they thought she was praying. She said, I'm not praying, screeching at them. And so after 4 days, they finally said, okay, it's time, apparently. And the doctor came walking in and he said, oh, the moon is rising. And he said, apparently that boy of yours, after I had come, said, was waiting for the moon to rise.
The doctor said that?
Yeah. Yeah, because he said, I just came in, and as I did so, the moon was rising, and it was beautiful. It was gigantic. So this boy was waiting for the moon to rise, and he's made some joke about being a lunatic, you know, and some crass joke or whatever. That's what she claimed. And true enough, he was right. So, and she was always worried about that, because on long trips, that we took in the car. You remember those long car trips, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. I would stare at the full moon. Whenever it was a full moon, I would stare at it the entire time because I was just enthralled by the full moon. And my mom would yell at me, don't stare at the moon. It'll make you crazy.
So I guess, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She was real worried about that. So little did she know, I was already there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Scorpio moons, I kind of like them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but with the world the way it is, what did it illuminate? I always think that the Scorpio moon is when you turn over the rock and all the stuff comes scurrying out, you know?
Exactly. So, yes. Yeah. Good analogy.
Yeah. Yep, and you try and see it all. You can't because it's moving very quickly. I was amazed at how fast earthworms can move. Have you ever seen earthworms really move as fast as they can move?
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
Well, I've seen night crawlers. Do you know what night crawlers are?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
The gigantic version of earthworms.
Yeah, because when you water, I remember when we were a kid, if you'd water at night, they'd all come out in the grass. And if we'd be out there playing or running in the dark, we'd get our flashlights and they would go scurrying off.
And
we thought that was great fun, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fast. And that to me is kind of what it feels like now. Everything is kind of up in the air, you know. It's just like the rock has been turned over and we can see that rock and we can see what's been turned over, and it's too late to turn it back over. Everything has been exposed. So now what do we do? I don't know.
Well,
I don't have a clue.
Yes, that's true, but isn't that the evolving way of planet Earth? We're always going to go through those periods of, you know, something's going to be hidden under the rock and then it's going to be exposed. That's kind of the process.
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of like trying to explain to people. Well, I have a cousin in Egypt who wants me to explain my hippie years. And it's like, how do you do that? Because I was a freak. And I'm like, how do you explain? Because I was a pretty solid freak for about 2, maybe 3 years. How do you explain a loss of time in that way? You know, I don't know. I don't know what to say to him. And why does he really want to know that? And why would I want to tell him in specifics? Because a lot of it is not very savory, you know. And that's pretty Scorpio stuff when you think about it, I think.
Well, and what is it that you think he wants to know?
That's what I've been asking.
You think he wants to understand it? Make it make logical sense? Or what is it you think he wants?
He feels like an outcast on his side of the family. Mm. He's called himself the black sheep of the family. So I believe I have a reputation. And mm-hmm. I think the reputation is similar to that. His dad loves me very much. And I think that has been kind of a problem at times, because I met his dad, you know, for just 6 months, actually, when I was 7 years old. And so I don't know what he wants. I think that he feels that he didn't fall in line. In that country, I would have been burned at the stake, you know, or something. I mean, I don't know what would have happened to someone like me. It would have been very difficult, really bad. I think it's a blessing I was raised here, frankly. And because when I went through my rebellion, it was pretty rough. I mean, I was heavily into this stuff, but then I really stepped off the curb, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think reacting in part to the death of a friend at the age of 19. We were both 19. He died, but he died in an airplane crash. It wasn't like he OD'd on something, you know. And his name was Jack, and Jack's death just really, really took me out. Because if someone like Jack could die, he was a wonderful guy. He was, you know, smart and sweet. And he'd been my best friend since sixth grade. And you know, and if someone as amazing as Jack could die, what kind of world was it? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was having a lot of problems, personal problems. And when I went off the edge of the world, as I refer to it, I went pretty hard. And I hit the counterculture with a screech. And so I don't know what he wants to know. Does he? I don't know what I want. And there are parts of it that, frankly, the counterculture wasn't always very pretty. I mean, there was the music, but I didn't have any money, so I couldn't go to concerts, you know? Which is what people concentrate on. And it's like, I'm a deadhead. So people say, how many concerts did you go to? None. I didn't have any money. And I wasn't going to go to concerts and just hang out in the parking lot. I mean, that's not fun to me, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I don't know. Life is not always
understandable
or neat and tied up and, you know, it's like beatniks. A lot of people don't realize that the hippie movement was heavily influenced by the beatnik movement. I knew a beatnik in California uh-huh. when I lived out there. He had been a beatnik, and I said, what was being a beatnik like? He said, well, what do you mean? You know, he said, I drank a lot of coffee and hung out in coffee shops. Same thing I do now. That's what it was like. And he knew people. He knew, like, you know, he was in L.A. at the time, and he knew Neil Cassidy, and he knew, what's his name? The guy who wrote On the Road, you know. And I mean, he knew these people, and it's like, okay, that's what it was like. It was just your life. I don't know. all that stuff. It's the Scorpio side of society, I think. It writhes and it wriggles because it's growing. And it does so in a way that's, have you ever seen snakes mate?
No.
Yeah, okay.
I try to stay away from snakes.
Oh, well, me too. Yeah, serpents are a little bit of a, yeah. But National Geographic specials, they'll show you snakes mating every now and then.
Uh-huh.
And it's not a calm thing to watch. They kind of get in a ball and they just twist and turn and it's an amazing thing to see because it's rather frantic.
Mm-hmm.
It is indeed frantic. It's like they're rolling down a really, really steep hill, but they're not, you see. And it's amazing to watch, not in a you know, lascivious way or anything, but it's like there's an imperative behind it to survive, and that's what it is. It's the survival.
Right. That is what it is.
Exactly. And I think that there is something about Scorpio. I mean, Scorpio in the sky is exactly what it looks like. It is to me.
The scorpion, you mean?
Yeah, the Scorpio constellation. You can't mistake it for anything else, you know.
Yeah.
It is exactly what it looks like. It's a scorpion in the sky. You see it, you know it. You can't miss it for any. It's huge, first of all. And now's the time to begin looking for it, as a matter of fact. It's a summer constellation, if you want to see it. You should look in the southern sky, folks, you know.
In the southern sky?
Yeah.
At a particular time? Or does that change from month to month?
Yeah, it changes. In the southern sky, begin looking. I would say it's probably, I haven't spotted it yet, but look, I would say in about a month or so. And usually when it's really hot outside at night, usually about 8 or so, mm-hmm. and you look outside and here is this magnificent constellation that's gigantic in the southern sky. And here's this big curving tail with a red dot in it called Antares. That's Antares, mm-hmm. which means not Mars, right?
Yeah.
And the reason it's called that is because it's on the ecliptic, pretty close to the ecliptic, and people used to mistake it for Mars.
Right.
So, yeah. And it's pretty close to being opposite of Aldebaran, which is another red giant star, which is the bullseye in Taurus. So I love that. I just love that. And then you've got Fomalhaut, which is squaring that in Aquarius, and which is a very brilliant white star, which is the opposite of Regulus, which is in Leo. There is such balance, and those are the four corners of the universe to the ancients. Those are the four pillars of the universe. It's just so beautiful when you really stop. And I love to go out and look at constellations. You know, can't do it now because I can't, you know, get up at the crack of dawn. But
right. The
Scorpio side of things, which is coming very soon to be important to us because it's a summer constellation. And I look at it that way because there are certain constellations that rule. Leo, of course, is going to be an important one because it's another summer constellation, but that's because the sun will be in Leo soon. So you look at these, and Leo's a spectacular constellation as well, the reverse question mark in the sky, you know, the sickle, as they call it.
Right.
But Leo is about, wow, Leo has been recognized for thousands of years, as Taurus has been recognized. Man, the sky is so wonderful, and the stories that come from it, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. All the mythology. I love it. I, I mean, I'm certainly not as adept as you are. But the other thing I've really come to realize is how our lives are really just, we're always in a cosmic soup of mythology. Yeah. Even though we, you know, and I mean, I'm even talking about religion and spiritualities. We come up with all these myths to understand how life works.
Right.
And they're all, to one degree or another, it's just mythology.
Right.
You know, just like you said, your mother said, don't look at the full moon. It will make you crazy.
Right.
You know, that's mythology. Those are the stories that get handed down or stories that become important for one particular group or one particular culture. But just understanding, you know, once again, what I was saying in the beginning, our lenses, what we're looking through, what we believe to be true is all screened through that.
Yeah, I mean, she actually said to my father that while we were driving, he said, no, that doesn't. My father was a scientist, you know, and she said, won't it make him crazy? He said, no, of course not, you know. Wow.
Yep. Hold that thought. But I'm saying, and yet the truth is, just like you said, you know, is it an accident that you were born on the full moon? So it's not that the full moon makes you crazy per se, but rather you align with that kind of energy.
That's right.
And aligning with energy, that how often do we look at somebody else just making any decision and say, that's just crazy? Well, in a sense, what we're really saying is, I can't understand that. I can't figure out how that applies to my life. So that must be crazy.
When I was in school in Louisiana, a friend of mine introduced me to a fellow named Clifton. And he was, at the time, under the tutelage of a fellow, a druid, whom I became very good friends with. But he was born on the exact same day that I was born, but 12 hours difference. And we were as different as night and day. He was introverted. I'm kind of an extrovert, although I am an introvert. People don't realize that, but I do, if I can put it that way. You've been at a party with me. What do I generally end up doing? Sitting in a corner.
You stake out your place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you what I see you at a party. You're the hierophant.
Really?
Yes. Because this is what I'm thinking. You stake out a place and you're more than willing to talk to those who want to listen, but you're not particularly going to go out and look for followers or look for people who are going to agree with you. Like I said, it's kind of like, okay, here I am. This is my space. You can enter my space, and yes, I'll share my wisdom with you. In a sense, I want to say, if you're worthy. And when I say that, I know that sounds very, very blunt.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's understanding that, like I said, I've never seen you as a person looking for followers.
No. But everyone's worthy, you know, in my opinion. So,
well, yes, but you get what I'm saying. Or rather, what is the statement? If you have ears to hear.
There you go.
If you have ears to hear. So it's not worthy in terms of are you valuable, but if you have ears to hear, then you're probably going to enjoy being with me at this party and talking and laughing and joking and talking about whatever we're talking about. And guess what? If you're not, then you're going to be one of those people who walks away and goes, is he crazy or what?
Or what?
Or what? Yeah, he's just darn crazy.
Guy's weird and crazy.
And I probably said that a few times myself. You are crazy.
I really am not into a lot of external stuff, you know, at places like that. I don't, you know, I'm not going to do the limbo because the cracking of bones would be horrific to hear, you know, but I'm just not, you know, but that's anyway. So this guy was literally 12 hours difference in birth time. And the guy who introduced us was curious. He ran our charts. He was an astrologer and was fascinated. This was back in the 70s. And we got to be pretty good friends. And we were both heavily into what they called the occult back then.
Uh-huh.
And heavily into all these things that I am still heavily into, and I'm sure he is as well. But it was quite fascinating because there we were. And we wondered, how does this happen? Is it the chart? And I had to decide, yeah, a lot of it is the chart, you know?
Yeah.
We were so similar in many, many ways. It was strange, very strange.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I felt very close to him, but at the same time, I was the night version of him. So he was very, what would be the word? He was timid. And in what I studied, I was certainly not timid. If that's a good way to put it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, listeners, get out there and see those constellations. H.A. Ray, or is it H.H. Ray? The guy who wrote the Curious George books put out a wonderful book on the constellations. And what he did is he reimagined them. He basically fudged a little bit on the pictures, but he made it to where you can actually find them in the sky and see them.
Nice.
It's a great, great book. I can't recommend it too much. And it's wonderful. It's just called The Constellations. H.A. Ray. Curious George, he did this book. Curious George is not in it, so don't be too disappointed. But it's a remarkable, remarkable work. And some astronomers like it, some don't. I love it because you will immediately begin to see the constellations, immediately.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, yeah. And with that, the sky becomes real and it becomes alive. And you begin to see exactly where things are and the mythologies become very three-dimensional right away.
So, yes. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. So I love this time of year. I love when things are in this, when things are in this formation, so to speak.
Yes.
There's just something about it that really turns me on. And the moon right now, you mentioned the nodes. When the moon passed the south node, as it did, it went past the tail of the dragon, the Cauda Draconis, and the south node, which is spiritual more than the head, which is simply physical. And there are no planets there. Well, at least in the Vedic system, because there's nothing past Saturn. So the image is one of being alone until it hits the north node again, at which point it will then hit Saturn and Venus and Mercury and the Sun and then Jupiter and then Mars again. And so what it is, it's this freedom to really be itself. The moon can begin to sort things out. And I would really encourage people at this time, you mentioned this, to who are you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's nothing, the image I got was when it hits all these planets again, it's like, like in a movie theater trying to get to the aisle. Excuse me, uh-huh. I just need to get out here, you know, and it's going to be like that. But for right now, the moon is not being blocked by anything. And to me, the moon is very much the mind.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the moon is very much the mind. because it can be, the mind can be very dark at times, the mind can be very bright at times, but it's a form of consciousness to me. And because sometimes we're aware, sometimes we're not, it's emotions as well. But so we have this opportunity, because it really, it goes through all the 12 houses every month.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these mansions, the mansions of the moon, of course, which not everyone pays attention to. I don't pay that much attention, but I do sometimes. But the whole idea for me is taking kind of a gander of right now, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Where are you? So when my cousin says to me, tell me what it was like being a hippie, it's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? What do you want to know? What part of it? I mean, what do I want to tell him? And that's kind of the thing. And why do you want to know this information? And you know, what are you searching for? And maybe that's the key.
Yeah, what are you searching? And you know what? Gut level, I feel like he's searching for his soul group.
His soul?
His soul group.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is I almost feel like if he feels like an outsider, then it's, okay, you and this collective group, whatever's going on in the 60s or the late 50s, like you said, with the, you know, beatniks, and I don't know if that's what you said. Did you mm-hmm. call them beatniks? Okay. So then, you know, the whole thing in the 60s and maybe early 70s. But there was a sense of having a group. There was a sense of belonging to something, even if it was considered a counterculture. And
right.
I feel like that's what he's looking for. Where's my counterculture? How did you know, or how did you find them? And maybe that is kind of an emphasis of Aquarius energy right now.
That could very well, that is exactly, you know, for example, where does the torch get passed on? He's looking for some authenticity, I think, to his misery.
Yes.
And trying to see, is it genetic? Because I've never met him.
Mm-hmm.
He's much younger than I am.
Yeah.
Actually, I think he's my daughter's age. I'd have to find out. I think he's probably my daughter's age. I don't know. He seems pretty unhappy. I shouldn't be talking about him. I don't think he ever listens to anything I've done. But
I'm just saying, gut level, that's what I feel like. He's looking for his group. He's looking for that group of people that will make him feel like he's not so isolated. Which, actually, what you've reminded me of is, I don't know if you ever study Sabian symbols.
I've looked at them, yes.
I look at them, but I will admit it's not usually a big part of my consciousness. And
right.
For those listening, in astrology, I think it was Rudger, right? Dane Rudger, who had come up with what it's called Sabian symbols, and it's a description of every single zodiac degree. So there's 360. So you can literally look up Aries at 3 degrees, etc.
Right.
And so that book, though, even though I've got it and I've used it, it's very, I want to say, archaic in terms of, boy, you have to really be into the lingo. You have to really be into the energy to understand it, you know, really study the lingo of astrology. So
right.
In some ways, that whole idea of Sabian symbols was updated, and I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago by somebody called Martin Goldsmith. And he wrote a book called The Zodiac by Degrees. And then the subtitle is 360 New Symbols. But it's interesting because if you look up the full moon, this past full moon for yesterday, the Sabian symbol, this is how he describes it. He says, a seated elf has one arm around a large book and looks quizzically at the viewer, then turns into a rabbit and hops through a stone wall. It's kind of like, what?
Yeah, no kidding.
What? And then he goes on to give, you know, various descriptions. This is jumping to a new level of awareness, but only if you're willing to step outside of your current reality, if you're willing to step out of that framework. But I kind of was thinking about your cousin, because it also said examining life's magical possibilities versus living in a bookish dream of self-isolation.
You just hit the nail on the head. People miss the concept of magic.
Yes.
And you see, I believe in magic completely, because I've been a student of Aleister Crowley for, you know, a very long time. And I don't mean, you know, he was not a Satanist. He was not a black magician. That's all rubbish. He just understood the concept of naturalism, natural magic.
Yes.
And it exists, and it's not hard, and it's just life. And to understand it is to really kind of be happy, I think.
So, I think, go ahead.
I'm just going to say most people miss it. Most people.
We do.
And most religion misses it.
Yes. Well, and we literally have less than a minute to close the show out. I'm sorry. We were just getting way too close. But Mo, thank you so much for being here. And
on
that note, though, that Scorpio full moon introduces us. You know, we can fall through the rabbit hole, so to speak. We can look at life from a different viewfinder. We can allow ourselves to play with different alternate possibilities. That's what that full moon can do for us, along with that, those Mercury squares and Sun, you know, conjunct Saturn, or not Saturn, Uranus. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us today. Mo, as always, thank you for being so candid and for really just sharing yourself.
Thanks to
Serena, our producer today. And I do want to encourage everybody to stay tuned, because I'm joining Kelly on her show Empowerment, which is coming up next. We call it the Meeting of the Minds. But as we close today, I do want to just give one more quote that is from Sigmund Freud, because he had, you know, his son conjunct Uranus. And he said, "What progress we are making. In the Middle Ages, they would have burned me. Now they're content with burning my books." But the other thing he said, which I wanted to bring into this conversation, is man should not strive to eliminate his complexes, but to get into accord with them. They are legitimately what directs his conduct in the world. And I would simplify that just by saying, it's not about fixing ourselves. It's about understanding, accepting, and embracing who we are. Exactly who we are at every moment, not needing to heal or fix or be different. So everybody, thank you so much for joining me. This is CA signing out. You have been listening to Everyday Astrology with my guest, Mo Abdelbaki, on 1-2 Radio. You can find me on 1-2listen.com. And we are changing the way we listen to the world.